On today's show, we're going to talk to my friend Fred Hahn, personal trainer extraordinaire and author of Slow Burn and Strong Kids, Healthy Kids. Now, I'm going to tell you about my favorite anti-low-carb statement of the past week, and we're also going to hear from readers about their best tips for sticking to their low-carbohydrate diet. You are listening to Dana's Low Carb for Life. Hey, gang. Welcome to this episode of Dana's Low Carb for Life, brought to you by CarbSmart.com, the smart choice for your low-carb lifestyle. On today's show, we're going to talk to my friend Fred Hahn, personal trainer extraordinaire and author of Slow Burn and Strong Kids, Healthy Kids. Fred is seriously smart and has some surprising things to say about exercise and nutrition, so you'll want to stick around for that. Now, I'm going to tell you about my favorite anti-low-carb statement of the past week, and I hope you'll get a giggle out of that. And we're also going to hear from readers about their best tips for sticking to their low-carbohydrate diets. But first, let's talk about the latest major challenge to your low-carb intentions. We've just finished with the holidays, and you'd think that we'd be done with the whole, but it's a tradition excuse, and it's the holidays excuse, at least until Valentine's Day, right? Well, ha. You know what season is now upon us? It's Girl Scout cookie time. Yes, earnest, adorable children are going to be peddling sugary, flowery garbage in a public location near you. Around here, the grocery stores let the Scouts set up in their entry areas, which I have to say is very civic-minded, since they're selling products that directly compete with the stuff in the cookie aisle. But it also makes the junior cookie peddlers impossible to avoid. It's all too easy to tell yourself, well, it's only once a year, but we're not talking about one serving of cookies, are we? You've always bought at least one box of every one of your favorite varieties now, haven't you? And maybe more. And you're going to be eating them until they're gone, aren't you? We're talking of at least a few days, if not to a few weeks, of sugary, starchy temptation in the house, speaking to you from the kitchen cupboards. But Dana, it's for a good cause, I hear you cry. I couldn't agree with that more. I was a Girl Scout for years and years. My mom was my leader. It was a wonderful experience. So I'm going to let you in on a little secret. You don't have to buy cookies to support the Girl Scouts. You can just give them money. Every time I encounter the cookie sales force, I tell the girls straight out, I'm sorry, I don't eat sugar, but I was a Girl Scout and Scouts rule, so I want to donate to your troop. Then I slip the grown-up who's in attendance a few dollars, whatever I have on hand, and say, here, this is for the troop. Not only do I donate to the Girl Scouts, an excellent cause, I also plant in those children's heads the idea that at least some people don't eat sugar. That's not a bad lesson to pass on. And if anyone from Girl Scouts International happens to be listening to this, I have to tell you, if you'd sell trefoil-shaped boxes of mixed nuts or trefoil-shaped cheeses, I would buy a ton of them. I'd love to support you guys, but I'm not going to buy cookies. All right, I promised you a great quote, and this one is really fascinating. I got this from an article in the Charlotte Observer from North Carolina, and it was an article, actually, about low-carb diets. And the quote is from a Dr. Robert Rosati. Now, Dr. Rosati is a cardiologist, and he runs the Rice Diet Program at Duke University. Now, the Rice Diet is a low-fat, very low-sodium, high-fiber diet. And Dr. Rosati is also, along with running the program, the author of the book The Rice Diet Solution and several other books about the rice diet. I looked at the official rice diet website, and right up front it states that the diet is helpful for weight loss, hypertension, diabetes, and heart disease. And I clicked on that heart disease link, and it elaborated that the rice diet will lower cholesterol. Dr. Rosati is an outspoken critic of Dr. Eric Westman, who also works at Duke University, and who is also one of the country's most important low-carb researchers. Dr. Westman is one of the authors of A New Atkins for a New You. Regarding Dr. Westman's work, Dr. Rosati said, and I quote, "There's no doubt that the Atkins diet will lower your cholesterol, weight, and blood pressure, and get rid of your diabetes. But then what?" Did you get that? According to Dr. Rosati, there is no doubt, that the Atkins diet will lower cholesterol, weight, and blood pressure and get rid of diabetes. Yet, Dr. Rosati is apparently implying, at least it sounds to me that he's implying, that somehow the diet is also secretly undermining health. Now, this only can make sense if Dr. Rosati believes that cholesterol, weight, blood pressure, and blood glucose are unimportant as indicators of health. While I would agree that total cholesterol is not a meaningful indicator of health, and we can argue about what a healthy weight might be, some people feel it should be a little higher, some people think it should be really low, there is very little disagreement that blood pressure and blood glucose are absolutely vital, and that an elevation in either one causes ongoing, erosive, permanent damage to the body. And indeed, as I said, the Rice Diet website claims exactly those things as the benefit of the Rice Diet. It is very hard for me not to conclude that Dr. Rosati is criticizing a competing diet that he openly admits does everything his diet is supposed to do. Either those things improve health or they don't, but you can't have it both ways. By the way, the Rice Diet also claims that you won't be hungry eating a very low-fat diet centering on starchy foods. And all I can say about that is, having eaten a low-fat diet based largely on whole grains, I have to say I'm incredulous. Can you imagine the reaction if Big Pharma came out with a drug that reliably lowered cholesterol, weight, blood pressure, and blood glucose all four? They'd be petitioning to put it in the water supply. But when the Atkins diet does those things, and does them so reliably that an outspoken critic of the diet says that there is no doubt it will do all those things, it is still somehow bad. This is the through-the-looking-glass world of the low-carb critics. On our first show, we introduced low-carb voices and asked you to call in and tell us your best tip for staying on your low-carb diet. Because we're just starting out, we only got one response to that question, but it's a good one. Give it a listen.
Hi, my name is Katie from Cincinnati. I listened to your podcast today. It was awesome. Congratulations. I look forward to hearing it all year. I'm excited for you. I have been on low-carb for about a year, probably in 2 weeks, it'll be a year. I've lost 75 pounds this year, and I'm not stopping. My tip would be to definitely go on all the websites they have and listen to all the books and the podcasts and the YouTube of Jimmy and get support from all the other people out there doing low carb. Because definitely I have a lot of people who was telling me low carb was bad, and 75 pounds later, I am not feeling bad at all, and it's great. So thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Katie. I couldn't agree more. Over and over again, I have heard from people that support is vital to making this a long-term lifestyle change. Thanks so much for sharing your experience, and congratulations on your loss. Now, our question for our next show is for those of you who have started low-carbing recently, either as a New Year's resolution or just because it seemed like a good idea, which it is. Whether you're a total newbie or you've come back to low-carbing after falling off the wagon, here's what I want to know. What's your biggest challenge to staying on your low-carb program? What's your biggest challenge? Do you have a hard time knowing what to eat for lunch? Is it the leftovers on the kids' plates? Do you have to eat out with clients a lot? Are your friends and family talking down your diet and undermining you? What is the single thing that is most likely to make you stumble on your low-carb plan? We want to know, and maybe we can come up with some solutions. Call 412-385-DANA. That's 412-385-3262, and let us know. Since half the world resolved to start exercising just a week or so back, today's guest is my friend Fred Hahn, who is owner of Serious Strength Personal Training Studio in Manhattan, New York, and who is also the author of the book Slow Burn, which he wrote in collaboration with doctors Michael and Mary Dan Eads, who are known for writing Protein Power, and also Strong Kids, Healthy Kids. Now, I met Fred on the Low Carb Cruise last winter, just another reason y'all need to sign up for the Low Carb Cruise. And I was very impressed by his presentation on the benefits of weightlifting and resistance exercise and of super slow weightlifting in particular. So I got myself out of bed the next morning to participate in his how-to class, and I came away a believer. I now do slow burn style resistance training on my Total Gym once or twice a week, and it's doing very good things for me. It's also doing seriously great things for that nice boy I married. So, hey, Fred, Happy New Year. Thanks for coming on my show.
Hey, Happy New Year, Dana. I'm happy to be here.
Excellent. Now, a lot of people, I have a few questions for you here. First of all, a lot of people have argued to me that the obesity epidemic is really just because of a lack of exercise. We've all stopped walking. We've all stopped riding horses. And it's not really so much that we're eating a bad diet. It's more that if we all just were moving more, we wouldn't be fat. And I'd like to know if you agree or disagree with that and what role you feel exercise does play in weight loss.
Well, I certainly don't agree, and I think research has bears this out time and time again, that fat loss or fat gain, and of course, I always differentiate between weight loss and weight gain and fat loss and fat gain. Weight
Excellent
gain,
point.
You can gain muscle and be heavier, and that's better, or you could lose muscle and be lighter but yet still have the same amount of fat. Which happens very often to people who eat very low-calorie diets.
Sure.
So fat loss is really the issue. And the fact of the matter is that fat loss is a hormonal game. It's not a numbers game. The amount of actual, even if it was, the amount of calories that you can actually burn in a reasonable amount of time per day is very, very few. And what most people don't realize is that they have to subtract the amount. Again, this is assuming it, you know, the calories in, calories out is what is actually true. And let me preface this by saying I'm not saying that there isn't some truth to it, but the way that it's commonly understood, I should say, is certainly not the way it works.
Okay.
You would still have to subtract the amount of calories you would have burned anyway doing something else for that same period of time. So if you get on the treadmill for an hour and the machine says you burned 150 calories, if instead you were doing something else for that hour, you're still burning calories. So you're not burning that much extra. So you have to subtract the amount of calories you would have burned anyway.
Basal metabolic rate.
Right. And so if you burn 150 calories in an hour running on the treadmill, and you would have burned 70, 80, 90, 100 calories in that same hour doing something else, we're talking
sure.
a slice of bread. Now, as Gary Taubes points out in his book, Why We Get Fat, and it's been said throughout the ages, you work up an appetite. The fact of the matter is that most people, if they exercise enough to actually make a difference, they're going to be hungry, and they're going to be hungry specific. They might have their appetite suppressed directly after the exercise. Like very often people aren't hungry right away, but they get hungry after, and it stands to reason that what you expended, your body's going to want to put back in to keep homeostasis.
Sure.
So, and research has shown time and time again that very little, if any, benefit in terms of fat loss is experienced. But because it's the zeitgeist, people continue to believe it. You know, Mark Twain said that the truth is easy to kill, but a lie well told is immortal.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the lie well told was that exercise can significantly affect body weight or specifically body fat, and not only is it not true in practice, research has never shown it to be significantly true in any way. So the answer to that would be a big fat no.
Well, there we go. On the other hand, I know I just plain feel a lot better when I feel strong. I'm also aware that the research indicates that resistance training is in many ways the fountain of youth, that a lot of what we consider aging is actually progressive muscle loss. That, and of course, the effects of sugar on the body, which leads to, you are, of course, and you touched on this, you're famously a proponent of low-carb, high-fat diets. So am I, obviously. I have a brisket in the slow cooker smelling fabulous as I talk to you. The standard wisdom is that anaerobic exercise, like heavy weightlifting, requires glucose, is perforce done on a glucose-burning metabolism rather than aerobic exercise, which can be fueled by fat. So, and it's to the point where bodybuilders pound sugary drinks in the gym, sometimes specifically to cause an insulin release, which they claim is anabolic. So can you straighten us out on this? Because I know I do my slow burn without eating a bunch of carbs ahead of time. I did once eat a half an apple to see whether it made a difference. I didn't think it did. It certainly didn't. I didn't add any reps or anything. So what's going on here?
The truth is that actually what you're always using a combination of fuel sources, whether you're doing aerobic exercise or whether you're doing anaerobic exercise. So you're not only using fat for fuel when you're doing aerobics, and you're not only using glycogen or glucose for fuel when you're doing high-intensity strength training. So the actual importance of the fuel source is small because, again, since the calories in, calories out argument does not hold up to scrutiny for the most part, one shouldn't really think about what kind of fuel they're burning when they exercise. The benefit of resistance training, of course, is that you're going to increase some muscle tissue, which is going to elevate your metabolism a little teeny bit. The totality of the trained muscle, meaning not just the amount of muscle that you add to your body, but the total amount of trained muscle also has a metabolic effect, a positive metabolic effect. And so when you're strength training, you're in a sense breaking muscle tissue down, and then your body has to recover, repair, and regenerate. So that whole process is metabolically expensive. Of course, again, you can't rely on that alone for body fat loss. You can rely on it alone for improving health, improving muscle tissue, bone mineral density, all the goodies that come along with resistance training. But the, you know, and the bodybuilders and the exercise junkies who are gulping down the Gatorade and all those other juices, they've just all bought the hype, and that's really the long and short of it.
Well, and I know I've tried also doing sprints without pounding any kind of carbohydrate, and I can do Phil Campbell's Sprint 8 without doing a bunch of carbohydrates, and I don't fall apart.
You have enough carbohydrate stores, enough glycogen stores. You're just not going to run out. I mean, maybe if you tried to run 100 miles.
You'll
tap into body. I believe that is what hitting the wall in a marathon is. You're getting very close to running out of your body's ability to tap into glycogen stores. And your body now wants to use more body fat for fuel, but because you're so reliant upon the sugar, it's a tough switch over.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is that, I mean, I've read that in about 2 weeks of low carbing, your body upregulates the fat-burning enzymes, you know, which have been downregulated if you give your body a lot of carb, and that actually means that endurance exercise, you can actually do better. And it would not surprise me if the degree to which you're keto adapted makes a big difference there.
Yep, I would agree with that.
Okay. So, and here's a question, another question that I know is dear to your heart. This is that time of year when huge numbers of people are hitting the gym and they are going straight for the treadmill or the elliptical machine.
Yeah.
I told you about that morning when I first went and did slow burn on the ship after having done your how-to class, and I was the only person on the weight machines, but there were enough people on the treadmills that we could have run the entire ship. I kept thinking, just hook those guys up to the screws, will you?
Right.
So I know you are not a fan of cardio, not that you're, you know, against it, that you think it's like a bad for you to go dancing or for a walk or whatever, but that you feel it's hugely oversold and actually has minimal benefit, especially when compared to resistance training. So please, for an audience that no doubt is thinking, oh, well, it's the new year, I ought to be getting more exercise, please speak to this.
Yeah, again, it boils down to buying into the zeitgeist and believing that you can burn a significant amount of calories, that burning calories is even of benefit to body fat stores, that the time that you need to spend doing all of this is gonna somehow make a difference. There are those people who will say, well, Fred, I started running on the treadmill for an hour and a half a day, and 2 months later, I was down 2 dress sizes. So what happened there? Well, there's a couple of things. One, it's called continued preoccupation. For that hour and a half, 2 hours where you weren't exercising, you might have been eating.
Okay.
Snacking. And it's easy to eat 100, 200 calories. So maybe being on that treadmill kept you from eating. But in almost every instance that I've asked, and I would say every instance that I've asked somebody this, I said, did you do anything to change your diet as well? They say, I did. But, you know, but they believe that it's the exercise that did it.
Yeah.
They don't want to feel wrong for all the time they've spent.
And especially since running is such a miserable thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, let's face it. There are some people who love it, or at least they say they love it, and I think they say it because it does give them a sense of accomplishment that
virtue.
If the lie well told was that smoking cigarettes was healthy, and it used to be, remember back in the 20s and 30s, mm-hmm. doctors used to say that it aided digestion.
Good for your nerves, too.
Yeah, you would think that you'd feel good that you were doing it. So if you make somebody believe that something is good for you and you buy it hook, line, and sinker, and not only that, but your doctor tells you you're doing the right thing, you know, there it is. You know, it's very difficult for people to hear that what they're doing and what they have been doing is a waste of time and that what they believe in is wrong. Most people have a very difficult time with that.
Well, and of course, that's something I'm up against with explaining to people that their low-fat diet loaded with grains and beans is not good for them.
That's even harder.
It's a constant battle, yeah. I was going to say, in my experience as a massage therapist, of all the non-contact sports, now, obviously, a few things can rip up a body the way football can, but I've worked with some pro footballers, and it's just ugly, but... But of all the non-contact sports, running is the one that I find has the highest injury rate. But the other thing that I've noticed is that serious long-term runners do tend to be slim. Now, I would say, and Gary Taubes would say, that's because people who are naturally slim tend toward running rather than so much that running makes you slim. But also, I think there's some feeling that the body will shape itself to the particular kind of stress put upon it, and the body shucks off upper body mass if you're going to force it to carry the upper body around at a higher rate of speed, which would mean loss of muscle mass. I don't know a whole lot of people who run seriously who are particularly muscular,
right.
and I've seen them with their clothes off.
Yeah, just specific adaptation to an imposed demand. Your body will shed muscle for ballast, so that you can go do this thing that you're asking it to do. You know, one of the things that is true about endurance activity is it does help with insulin sensitivity and mm-hmm. blood sugar regulation. It does. It just does.
Well, but you can get that, according to my friend Rob Thompson, Dr. Rob Thompson, you can get that effect in a half an hour to 45 minutes of simply walking every other day.
Yeah, you probably could.
That's all it takes.
Right, that's what I mean to say. I mean to say that physical exercise and strength training recently has been shown to be more potent than aerobic exercise for these things. But and of course, not eating the carbohydrates in the first place is probably the best thing that you can do. So it's not there in the first place to have to regulate. But it could very well be that marathon runners and people who are chronic aerobicizers, though there's much detriment to it, perhaps one of the few things that they get that's positive from it, other than we're not talking about psychological issues, just physiological issues, is that they may very well be helping their bodies regulate blood sugar and insulin, and therefore it could be one of the reasons why they seem to be leaner. They seem to be lean for the most part. But then again,
Gary Taubes would say that it's not that people who exercise a lot are thin. It's that thin people, because their bodies skew their energy toward immediate use and away from storage, have more energy to burn off, and they go out and run.
That's absolutely plausible. I mean, that's right. I mean, you don't, that bouncing a basketball doesn't make you 7 feet tall.
And as Chris Rock once famously said, being married to him had not made his wife funny.
Right.
I know that I once read an article that claimed that they had demonstrated, or at least come up with the idea from studying female runners, that running made women's breasts shrink because serious female runners tended to have B cup chests or smaller.
Mm.
Now, as a girl who's been toting around a rack for a while now, I can tell you that it goes the other way around. Girls built like me just don't run.
Yeah.
and it's just backside two reasoning.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've gone over our 10 minutes. I've been taking up your time. But this is so interesting, and I could talk to you forever. So,
Same here.
So on the cruise, I'll have to get you a drink. And folks, come on the cruise. Meet me and Fred. And are you going to be teaching slow burn again on the cruise?
Yeah, it'll be fun. I would like to do this, pretty much the same thing that we did last time, give a demonstration and see if we can get to more people on, we did the lecture on the machines. I'd love to do that again.
It would be great. Folks, don't wait that long. Go out, get the book. You've got the Serious Strength website, but you also have a blog now.
Yes, it's slowburnfitness.com.
Okay. And folks, do come on the cruise. Do meet me and Fred. Do see his demonstration. This is amazing stuff. That nice boy I married and I have indeed been changing our bodies, doing on the total gym, because it's so efficient, doing about 15 minutes of resistance exercise about every 5 days.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely making a difference. Thank you very much, Fred, and I'll see you on the cruise.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, Dana.
Wow. We're running over time. I better wrap this up. Thanks so much for listening to Dana's Low Carb for Life. Please do call in and let us know your biggest challenge for your low-carb diet at 412-385-DANA. And come back and listen to the next episode. Thanks. This is Dana Carpenter saying thanks for listening. If you like today's show, please leave a review at the iTunes store. You can always leave questions and comments at 412-385-DANA or write us at feedback@danaslowcarbforlife.com. For complete show notes, please visit our site at www.danaslowcarbforlife.com, and don't forget to visit the blog at holdthetoast.com. Special thanks to Disc of Light Media and our sponsor, carbsmart.com.